Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Moneyweb.
Now, with the US election looming, in fact, less than a week to go, one issue remains conspicuously absent from the campaign trail. It's the government deficit. Flagship asset management fund manager Philip Short is asking why this growing fiscal burden, listen to this number, 125% of GDP is not on everybody's radar. Both parties, he goes on to say, have contributed to this massive debt pile, but neither is addressing it openly, despite projections that plans from both sides could add trillions more over the next decade. Now, the reason why we're doing this story tonight, obviously it's good to look at the global economy, but in one way or another, this is also going to have some kind of spin-off ramification as far as South Africa is concerned. So let's dive into this issue. Philip, good evening to you and a very warm welcome. First of all, maybe just explain to me why the US government deficit has grown so drastically in recent years and who would bear primary responsibility?
It's difficult to say who's primarily responsible because, as you mentioned, both parties have contributed quite meaningfully to it. The last budget surplus was in 2001 under Bill Clinton, and since then, every single year has been a budget deficit. And the reason why this is a problem is that deficits are funded by debt. So the government, every time they have a budget deficit, they fund that by issuing more government debt. So as you can imagine, if you've had a deficit since 2001, and some of them have been quite significant during COVID and the great financial crisis, is that that is the main reason why US government debt is sitting at the odd $35 trillion.
So if we have a deficit of 125% of GDP in the United States, maybe just give me a sense of what the short-term risks are that this poses to the American economy.
The number one issue with this 125% number of GDP is that it indicates that the debt is not being used productively. So this ratio from the 1980s was probably sitting at about 70 or 80% of GDP, and it's now sitting at 125% of GDP. And the US's own Congressional Budget Office expects this to hit 200% in the next 30 years. The short-term risks is that this indicates to the market that the fiscal situation of the US is unsustainable, and that makes borrowing costs, as people decide, okay, can I trust the US government to get its debt house in order, that the borrowing costs of US debt starts going higher. Debt costs going higher is inflationary, and that will be negative for most financial markets.
And this is a massive economy, and there are ramifications, as I mentioned at the start of our conversation, for all other countries. Let's get there in just a moment. But first of all, you talk about the debt not being used productively. Explain that to me.
So the reason why we look at debt to GDP as a ratio is that if you, for example, can borrow $100 and you invest it in the economy, which is represented by your GDP, you want your GDP to grow by at least the amount that you've borrowed the money amount. So if I borrowed $100 in an effective economy or productive economy, I want my GDP to grow by at least the same amount. If the GDP does grow by more than the amount I've borrowed, then that ratio comes down as your denominator gets larger than your numerator. So that's why we look at this ratio. And the fact that if you build a highway and you're charging people to ride over that highway and you're making money from that, then you can afford to borrow more money and build more highways. And so your economy becomes more productive. This has not been the case with the US, as we can see from the rising debt to GDP number.
And the concern here, or the solution, would be to perhaps start looking at fiscal austerity. But in an election cycle, this is something that no politician, whether it's in the United States of America or anywhere else, is going to go near.
Yes, and I think this is probably the main point for us, and I think for listeners to, if I could highlight one thing, it's this. It is that the interest bill, the U.S. interest bill for the government has gotten so large that the U.S. government is at the point now where they are borrowing money, more money, just to pay the current interest bill, not the principal. Put it into relatable terms, as if me and you had a credit card and we had maxed out that credit card, and we now have to get a second credit card just to pay off the interest on the first credit card. So that is why, with some sort of confidence, say that deficits will continue in the foreseeable future, because they need to raise more debt just to pay for the interest on the current debt.
Am I over-amplifying this when I say that there are shades here of the 2008 financial crisis, which we all know ended very badly.
No, I don't think they're comparable. The one was more in the general economy. So looking at 2008, and that was the general economy, and that's when there were junk assets and liquidity dried up because none of the banks wanted to borrow money or sell money or buy money or any assets from the other banks because they weren't sure of the assets or the quality of the assets that the other banks were selling to them. So then the whole economy dried up because there was no liquidity. No one wanted to lend money to anyone. And that's when the government or the Fed came in and flooded the market with money. Here you got the issue where the government is just spending too much money. And if they wanted to, they could carry on printing more money, but that would ultimately be inflationary. So the one was a liquidity problem, and here this becomes 2008 was a liquidity problem. Mm. And here we got more problem of credibility, the US credibility.
And if that's the case, then what are the potential consequences for investors, particularly if this deficit trend continues unchecked?
So what I like to say to myself is that the U.S. can never default. So, it's not a problem with the U.S. defaulting. It's because they can always print more money because all their debt is in dollars. But if they keep on printing money, you're going to have long-term bonds, so 10-year treasuries, which we've already seen now in the last couple of weeks go from 3.6 to about 4.2%. You're going to see yields go higher on long-term bonds, which means that it's more expensive for people and governments themselves, or the U.S. itself, to borrow money. Now, all else being equal, if borrowing costs go higher, this is inflationary. And in that environment, when you've got high inflation and high long-term bond yields, you've got equities and bonds that will suffer. And you'll have things like real-world hard assets, such as gold and other commodities, doing better in such environments.
And Philip, just a quick one, please. What's the worst case scenario here in terms of getting this under control, Trump or Harris?
The projections, looking at their own explicit statements in terms of what they want to spend, what tax cuts they do or don't want to do point that the deficit is going to be higher under Trump. But there is the caveat, and it's, the one thing that you can do is if you can get the economy to grow really, really well, if you can get that GDP number up relative to the debt issuance, then that would be a plus. So from a pure deficit point of view, it looks like it's more negative under a Trump administration. But to be honest with you, I'm not sure in terms of who is better to get that GDP number up.
Well, as I said at the start of this conversation, less than a week to go. And as you've heard from Philip Short from Flagship Asset Management, the stakes are incredibly high. Philip, thank you very much indeed. I appreciate your time tonight.
Heart Business on Heart 1027 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.